I so love hearing that song on this Sunday. So thank you very much for choosing that. I was actually thinking about it while I was preparing the message this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me? Am I on? Okay, awesome. Good start. So welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm so happy to be here today, that final Sunday in the year 2018, where we join together as a beloved community, and really we just give thanks for everything that we've experienced this year. All the things that build through the year that bring us to this point of acknowledging this celebration of the Christ consciousness, and then ultimately on this particular Sunday, I always like to talk about peace. Tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., and yes, pajamas are welcome. I'll probably be wearing sweats or something. We will gather here, and we have a gorgeous sacred ceremony. We will have all the candles on our altar of faith lit. And we will be reading a meditation written by John Randolph Price. And this is a world peace meditation that has been going on since the 1980s. And it grows every year. And millions of people will be meeting. It's not an odd time everywhere, but it's 5 o'clock here. When I was in L.A., it was 4 o'clock. It felt like the middle of the night. 5 o'clock feels like a great break for me. But we're all doing it at the same time. And we will be reading that meditation that John Randolph Price wrote. And it's a call and response kind of meditation. It's quite beautiful. And then we will spend some quiet time meditating together. There'll be readings, and there will not be, it's not a formal service. It's a beautiful ceremony or ritual, and it's the way we start out every year. And then at the end of the day, you are invited back, and you can do the release ceremony that Sue Witter does traditionally every year. We don't see each other that day. I come in the morning, she comes in the evening, and probably most of you pick one of those. But boy, to do both of them, what a great, great way to start the year. So the title of my message this morning is Great Peacemakers. I have a book. I brought it with me. I don't know why. Sometimes it's just fun to hold up a book like a prop, you know? It gives you something more to do. It's funny. And so I have this great book called Great Peacemakers, which is where I got the name from, knowing that I want to talk about peace today. I love that song. I love that John Lennon song. I don't think it's easy to sing, but I have a favorite line, and I tell you this every single year. Anybody remember what my favorite line in that song is? You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I cannot hear that song without feeling the emotion of tears. You know, it's like, oh, it's that one time a year I remember, like, oh, that's right. I'm not fighting for some cause that a bunch of people are against. We're all for the same thing. Nobody really, in my heart, in my beliefs, nobody wants the opposite of peace. None of us, or very few of us anyhow, appreciate conflict. So in some way, we stand united in this idea of this desire for that experience of peace, and it's so wonderful to remember, I'm not the only one, and you're not the only one. So I looked for a quote from Ernest Holmes, and I looked for the last time in that wonderful little book, Creative Mind, published 100 years ago in 1918 as the first book that Ernest Holmes produced, and I found a gorgeous quote on peace. You know, I've had so much fun on this 100-year theme, I just may continue it. I think next year we'll do Science of Mind 101, you know, like 101, you know, I think, and just continue it. Only next year I can use that book Creative Mind and Success, because he actually released that book the same time he released this book, the same year, later in the year. So we might be doing, you never know, we might be doing 101, because I have enjoyed it so much, and I noticed that these quotations have really inspired me, and they have kept me riveted in our philosophy, our teaching, and the gorgeous writings of our founder. Ernest Holmes said this: "We are all in mind, and mind is always creating for us. We are all in mind," that's a capital M mind, meaning the mind of God. So we are all a part of that one mind of God, and that mind is always creating for us as we think, with our own minds. And as we are thinking creatures, always thinking, our happiness depends upon our thought. Our joy depends upon our thought. Our peace depends upon our thought. It is the law of our lives. That's a profound statement. And if you have any confusion in understanding the fullness of those words, I would invite you to take a class this year. I'll be offering the foundational class again towards the end of January. The dates are all printed in your program, so you can look that up. There are lots of details there about all kinds of things that are coming up in January and February. And we really look at the basics of understanding there is an element of God or a concept of the God that we teach that we call the law. It is that concept of understanding the way life in this universe works, where it's just always working for us, just like the natural laws and physical laws of nature. Gravity. I needed you to say it, I guess, that's all. So I believe that all of us, and this really feeds me and keeps me going, I believe that all of us have a desire for peace. Keeping our minds thinking peaceful thoughts, however, is a bit of a challenge sometimes, especially when there's stuff going on in the world that feels irritating to us. And by the world, I mean your family, your home life, your neighborhood, whatever. Somehow, there is an instinct within us that knows that peace is possible. And it is the nature, therefore, of our being to desire that peace. I like that biblical passage that references this idea that there is a peace that passes our human understanding. Because when I hear that quote, it reminds me that it's easy to think peace is missing from our lives, but there is a peace that abides always at the very core of our individual being. It is there all the time, and it's never limited. It's never missing. It's never gone. It's waiting for us to sort of call it into action. And so we can't understand that if our life doesn't feel very peaceful, but it's there. And it seems like every faith has some variation of teaching that particular truth. So when Holmes speaks in this quotation about peace depending upon our thoughts, we begin to see that this is a bit of a high calling. You know, it's this Christmas season of festivities. It's the welcoming of the new year where we talk a lot about peace on earth and goodwill to all of humankind. It is a call, but it's a rather big ask. You know, it's a rather big thing for us to stop and ponder about. So I wanted to suggest today that, you know, to have a healthy mind, sometimes Holmes would refer to a healthy mind as being in your right mind. Other spiritual authors use those terms as well. That a healthy mind isn't necessarily an empty mind. And I think when we try and practice some Eastern spirituality, we get confused and think that there's something, some blessing in our ability to empty our mind. But I think just the opposite happens as we begin to create some type of a stillness, a sitting practice or a meditation practice in our own lives. What we learn is we become very aware that our minds are pretty frisky. You know, there's a lot of activity going on in our minds all the time, and that is natural. There's nothing wrong with that. You're not broken. It may feel like that on certain days where the committee in your head seems to be making more decisions for you than you'd like. But it shows us that there is that place to come and stand. It's as if God marked an X on that spot right where you are, and that we have this ability then to choose and to direct our thinking in a direction that works for us, that will serve us in a positive way in our own lives. So you don't have to study spirituality very long before you begin to recognize that our thoughts and our beliefs and our experiences are all reflected back to us. That everything we live through is a part of our being and what we have chosen from time to time to believe, or what we think about, whether we're thinking about what we're thinking about or not, and that we have some place to really be active and participate in all of that. And even as we know this is where it got interesting for me, even as we know this, sometimes we seem to not be able to resist that temptation to blame other people or something outside of us for what's not going well in our life, for the absence of peace. You know, you're in a good mood, and then somebody comes over who's kind of negative from the way you're interacting with them. It feels like, wow, I've worked so hard to be positive today, and now I'm feeling kind of negative. So it feels like there's some threat to our peace, that can be taken away from us. And so I was thinking that it has to do with two words that happen in our minds. If only. If only. I'd feel more at peace if only. And then you get to fill in the blank. If only I would be so peaceful if only I had more money. Oh, I would be so peaceful at home if the neighbors behaved themselves better. I would be feeling so peaceful right now if only my children had called on Christmas. Or the big one, if only the world weren't so messed up right now. Everything would be okay then. Right? So all of these examples are suggesting that there's some kind of thought process that we encounter where we add those two words, if only, as if something has the power to stand in our way and block our peace. And that's what I want to talk about today. You know, the really cool part about computers and research engines and being able to Google stuff is that you can look up if only. I can't do that in the dictionary. It's a little more complicated to do that. But online, I can just type in those two words, if only, and a bunch of information comes up to help me understand what all that means. And so there were several sources. One said, if only shows a contrast. It reveals a contrast to us as to how things are and how we wish things were. Right? And then at another place I read that to say if only is actually a stronger meaning than if you said, I wish that. When you start a sentence with if only, it has more of an impact. It has a stronger meaning to it. We use those two words, if only, to talk about past, present, future, but all of them are unreal conditions. Because we're just imagining, if only. And so the word if is a very conditional word. And when I read that, I got really excited because I thought, wow, our teaching is all about conditions. The word if is about conditional. It's a conditional word, and everything we teach is about using the conditions that exist in our life to point us back to truth. If you're noticing what's missing in your life, you are not standing in the middle of appreciating what is in your life that is there for you to appreciate. So if only thinking, if we catch ourselves doing it, we can notice that it's conditional and that's the whole point. What are the conditions that you're wishing for instead of recognizing that every good gift is already given? Every good gift. So our idea of thinking if only could be an expression or a yearning. The way we can recognize a yearning in our heart from something that we have not accepted into our life yet, but that we want. Now, the great part of this teaching, the science of mind, religious science, whatever you want to call it, and even including all of New Thought, is that we are invited, and I'm making this up, but just so you know, this is a real Karenism, you can quote me. The purpose of the teaching invites us to change our if only to what if. What if? Now, with that different approach, we open ourselves to a whole realm of brand new possibilities. So I got excited about all of this, and I wanted one quote. I wanted at least one great outside quote from a fairly well-known source that was not from New Thought. And I found something from Joseph Campbell that spoke well to the message I'm desiring to deliver this morning. Joseph Campbell said this: if we are to recognize and experience peace in our lives, the world would naturally come to peaceful ways of being, one person at a time. So our job is to straighten out our own lives. It's an inside job. It really is. Something to think about. So as we close out this year, as 2018 is right there, you know, I mean, I'll wake up at 5 a.m., it'll still be 2018, but only for a few more hours. And so as we close out this year, I wanted to recognize some of the people who are considered great peacemakers according to sources that study peacemaking. And all the people you would expect to be in here, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King. See how I'm using the book now? It's really comfortable. Does it give me more authority? Yes. Okay, good. Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Thich Nhat Hanh and all these great Mother Teresa, people we think of when we think of people that brought change and people that were invested in bringing change peacefully, even though it didn't always look that way. Those people are all mentioned in that book, but what I wanted to share with you today is a list of people that you may not have heard of, and I want to tell you what their contributions to bringing peace to the world, to the planet, what those contributions were. So the first person that interested me was Henry Salt. Henry Salt was born in 1851, so he was almost a generation before our founder, Ernest Holmes, was born, and that was 1887, so 1851 was, 30, 40 years earlier, and I'm not good at math, did you notice? 30, 40. I'm not good with math quickly like that, but I can figure out a budget. It's apparently true, right? Amen. Henry Salt was an English scholar, and he is known to be the first advocate for the rights for animals. He is the first person known to verbally, he desired to cultivate a more humane society that included animals. So that was what he brought. Rachel Carson, a woman, a female American biologist who in the early 1960s took a stand against pesticides. In the early 1960s. And she had this desire to restore some kind of balance in nature. Anderson Saw was a 12-year-old Brazilian in 1979, and he saw his brother murdered by drug lords. And that experience didn't turn him bitter, but it inspired him to make changes in his own life, to turn his life around, but to help other children at risk to turn their lives around too, to choose nonviolence. He did that through music. What a blessing. I didn't have to turn out that way. And then there's Father Bruno Husar, founder of, in Israel, the founder of Niv Shalom, and that is the Oasis of Peace. He passed in 1996 at the age of 84, but he was born in Egypt to Jewish parents, and he became a priest. He became a Dominican priest. So he considered himself both a Jew and a Christian, and he dedicated his life to improving understanding between Israelis and the Palestinians. So what do we see in these great peacemakers? You know, we don't all set out to do something big and well-known. We don't set out to be famous for something. We're looking for the qualities of peacemaking that qualified them to show up in a book about great peacemakers. Well, I would say that the first thing I noticed is that they all value life. But they value life in their own specific way. So they honor diversity, they either choose nonviolence, they care about the planet, or they just cultivate a personal life that demonstrates they value peace. All of them value life and see value in peace. And these are the same things that matter to us. Notice that we have this great diversity of how we show up and what matters to each of us individually. And so we don't all have to do all of that work. We only have to pay attention to the one thing that we are called to do. We get to show up and offer our gifts, whatever our gifts may be. But as a spiritual philosophy, we absolutely value life. I would add Dr. Ernest Holmes to that list of great peacemakers. I would totally, easily add Dr. Ernest Holmes to that list. He was not a social activist. It's important to know that. He certainly stood for peace, but he was extremely comfortable being patriotic, supporting the war efforts. And still, he can be a grand peacemaker. What does this tell us about this great philosophy where we can look at the way people individualize their expression of peace in the world? And we go back to the very top of this message, and it is that it starts from our finding peace within us individually. Ernest Holmes synthesized a spiritual philosophy that would support both peace lovers and change makers. Can you hear that? Peace lovers and change makers. Look around this room. We are a room full of peacemakers, of change makers, of people that are willing to take a stand for love and for beauty and for joy, for the promise of change, for transforming our lives by cleaning up our thoughts, by daring to have new thoughts that are different from the worry thoughts that we might have been carrying around yesterday. And the way that you express that is going to be your individualized way of expressing that. So we have a lot of choice. And we each hear the call in a really perfect way. It's why we're here. It's why nobody else on the planet is exactly like you. And nobody can do what you have been called to do while you're here experiencing this life. We are diverse in our beliefs, thank goodness. We encourage diversity in this teaching. We see beauty in differences, and one of my favorite things to do is to reach out to you individually when I know there's something we think quite different about, and I have the courage to ask you to tell me about the way you see it. You may have noticed I've been doing that more lately, because I'm interested in that. And I think that that is a gift that we are being presented with, an opportunity that all the shenanigans going on in the world or, you know, in your neighborhood, whatever, all the shenanigans are that, it's that same opportunity calling us forward, inviting us to see the contrast. Are you feeling irritated? Use that as a compass that will point you in the direction of peace. Holmes had a meeting with Albert Einstein, and the meeting happened in the early 1950s in Pasadena, California, at Caltech. There was some big, all these brainy people were invited to come together and chat, and they seated Ernest Holmes next to Albert Einstein. And they had a wonderful conversation that night. I love this story because I was born in the early 1950s in Pasadena, California. So it feels kind of familiar, you know, Uncle Ernest and Uncle Albert. And after that meeting, Ernest Holmes wrote these words. He said, Einstein had agreed with his premise that permanent world peace is not an illusion, but a potential possibility and an evolutionary imperative, and that science will one day aid in that evolution. Isn't that great? What a courageous thing to say. Albert Einstein agreed with me. That's great. Love this man. So what's always been interesting to me is that in the teachings that we provide, Ernest does not encourage us to be an activist in any sort of a way, but rather to seek that peace, to know that it already abides within you, and to listen to the calls of what you are here to do. He listened very clearly to what he was called to do. He synthesized these great beliefs, religious traditions, classical philosophy. He put it all together in this, it's almost a mathematical methodology that can help us see these spiritual steps we can take to make life better, to make our life better, to see good and to practice seeing good in the world. Holmes always emphasized, above everything else, he always emphasized that there's always hope. We do not live in a hopeless environment. The universe is not capable of that. We should believe in good. We can change what's possible in our lives by changing our thinking. He had these very basic ideas, and he encouraged us to practice them in our own lives. And I would say that I agree with that. It takes practice. And it's not something you're going to master. you can have it one moment and then find the very next day you got to practice again. Because things will trigger us. Things will irritate us. And every time something throws you a little sideways, it's this gorgeous opportunity to return to your own center, to return to truth, and practice being a peace bringer, as Maya Angelou used to say. But Holmes would say, it is possible. It's okay if it goes beyond our understanding, but it is possible. He believed in that. I believe in that. and we can stand in truth, but we cannot criticize what we see that's not peaceful in the world if we aren't doing our own work. Holmes said this, "The peace within you is not something separate from God. This peace is something that expands from within. Always this peace has been in you. Always. Always this peace has nestled at the center of your being, desiring to reveal its perfection and its harmony." What beautiful words. Peace is within you. It is birthless, it is deathless, and it is changeless, even in a changing world. So for me, and this is how I will conclude this morning, I look for those prayers. I look for the sacred words that other people have prayed, those who really showed a profound belief in the possibility of peace and living in peace and teaching others by the way we show up. And the example I have brought to you today is a favorite quote of mine from Emma Curtis Hopkins in the little red book called Resume. And it's that quote, and I try and remember this quote every day of my being, where she says, "Lord, show me the way to make the world glad and sane. Show me the way to make the world glad and sane." In fact, if I put the quote into context, it says more. She says, "Rise up, my soul. Quicken me with heavenly fervor. And show me the way to make the world glad and sane." There is a way. It starts with us individually. So take a breath. Take a nice, deep, holy breath. And we're going to change our atmosphere from listening to praying. And so find your comfortable place right where you're seated. Get yourself situated to where we can let go of that which is intellectual and step into that holiness. As the ministers and the practitioners stand to surround us in this deep consciousness of prayer. I feel the love of God within me. I feel it and recognize it as that peace that passes all understanding. I feel the peace of God and that movement of life that is balanced, that is in perfect order, that is in harmony with every other part of this universe. And we can feel that here there's a divine call. There is that which is divine that pulls us gently forward. There is a divine tautness, a way in which we feel that ongoing connection. I know that there is a power and a presence that is greater than all of us, but we can use it, for those same qualities of God abide within us. And so as we remember this truth yet again, we allow ourselves to become increasingly aware of the presence of God in this room. We can feel that quickening of heavenly fervor within us. And we know it is the way in which we return to truth. It is the way in which we can plant our feet on this earth and know that there is a healing power here that is calling us, that is pouring out grace into our lives, that is filling us up with a renewed sense of divinity. And upon this recognition, realize that there's a healing going on. That anything that ails us is now healed as it is exposed to this light of truth. That the perfection is revealed again in a greater way than ever before. I feel the peace of God. And I recognize that we can have this sense of peace at any time. We simply stand in truth. We simply use that compass of our life. We do not disacknowledge the conditions of our life, but we use the conditions to see what it is that our hearts truly desire. And so as this year comes to a close, perhaps more than ever before, we open ourselves to the peace of God, to the peace that passes our human understanding. And we claim it, we call it good, and we feel the way in which that divine inner activity is transforming our lives, transforming our potentials for this new year. All is well. All is well. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. Thank you for these blessings, for the revelation of even greater truths around peace than we have been ready to understand. We open our hearts with this great sense of gratitude, and we release the words of this prayer into that divine law that always says yes. And together we say, and so it is. Yes.